You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an expert digs into some of the long-term impacts of Governor Walker's recent budget proposal.
First, being diagnosed with a serious illness like cancer, heart disease, ALS, or Alzheimer's can be a terrifying experience. Patients and their loved ones may fear that an illness is incurable or worry about how much time they have left and dread the difficult treatments that may come. While such a diagnosis can change our lives in an instant, that doesn't mean we have to give up the quality of our lives at the same time.
In fact, maintaining some of the things that give our lives value and purpose should be a key part of our treatment. That's according to our guest who spent his career treating people often nearing their ends of their lives or going into a serious illness. Dr. Stephen Panilat joins us now. He's a physician and distinguished professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. His new book is called Life After the Diagnosis, Expert Advice on Living Well with Serious Illness for Patients and Caregivers. Dr. Panilat, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let's go to that moment, and you've experienced this a lot as a doctor, when the patient gets that bad news of serious illness. In your experience during those minutes after the news is broken, what's important for the patients and doctors to help ease that shock and start to work toward the next step?
Yeah, you're exactly right. That bad news feels like you're flying on a plane cruising at 36,000 feet, and all of a sudden the plane just drops 10,000 feet, and when you look out the window, the engine is on fire. And it feels like you're going to die, and things are just going to come crashing down around you. And you feel like you're in a panic and don't know what to do. And the important thing to remember is, as terrible as that is, there are things to do to get control of the plane, to get control of your life, and to fly smoothly and have a good quality of life. It's important to know that you can take a moment and to kind of regroup yourself. Often what happens is, in that awkward moment after the bad news, the doctor wants to fill in the space and begins talking. And it's like, you know, in the Charlie Brown specials, you know, how the adults always go, wah, wah, wah. That's what it's like to the patient. So if you're the patient in that situation, just put up your hand, ask the doctor to wait a minute, regroup, and then you're ready to listen.
There's
and hear about what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and there's a lot of complicated stuff to deal with at what may be the worst moment in your life. How do you start taking control and getting the information you need and coming up with that plan?
Yeah, the first thing to know is that there's usually it's not a rush, even though it feels like all you want to do is start treatment. I remember my patient John, who was 85 years old when he was diagnosed unexpectedly with pancreatic cancer. And when I shared with him this terrible news, I said, you know, John, I'm so sorry, but the biopsy shows you have pancreatic cancer. He just couldn't wait to get the treatment started. He said, you know, Dr. Pan, I need to go see an oncologist right away and start treatment right away. And I tried to explain that that's not necessary, but he was very insistent and went ahead and did that. The treatment, unfortunately, made him really sick. And after one treatment, he said, you know, I'm done. And what was interesting, you know, about a month or two later, when he was unfortunately getting sicker, it was a very rapidly progressive cancer for him, unfortunately. He said, you know, Dr. Panilat, I'm worried now that maybe the chemotherapy is what made me sick. You know I want it, but now I'm worried that's what made me get sick so fast. And it was just so interesting to see that on one hand, he wanted to start treatment so quickly, but then once he did the treatment, now he was worried that the treatment hurt him. And so what I say is, you know, take a moment, take a day, take a week. If you need, get a second opinion, then come back, write down the list of questions that you have for the doctor, and then come back and ask those questions. Bring someone with you who can help listen. If necessary, even record the visit for the doctor so that you really have all the information you need to think about what the next steps are. Another patient who was diagnosed with just the exact same problem, he was in his 60s with pancreatic cancer, took that diagnosis and said, wow, boy, you know, I had this trip planned to my hometown. I haven't been there in years, and I really wanted to go back and see all my friends, but I got this diagnosis. And when we talked with the oncologist, he said, you know what? It's fine. 2 or 3 weeks, not a problem at all. Will not change what happens. Go and enjoy your trip, see your friends, and then come back and start the chemotherapy. And it was good that he did, because the treatment really knocked him down and would have made the trip really difficult. So understanding what's really important to you and what you value, what you really want to achieve in that moment after in the time after the diagnosis can be really important.
You know, before we even get to the medical treatment side of this, you talk about attitude and self-compassion for a patient in this situation. You talk about people, they get the lung cancer diagnosis and they think, oh, it's my fault I smoked, or, you know, I lived wrong, or there's something wrong with me, and or they're overwhelmed by the information and feeling bad about that. Talk about the role of self-compassion after getting this serious diagnosis.
Yeah. Everybody thinks about, you know, what did I do to bring this on? And the challenge, of course, is that we do that in our society as well. You know, when someone gets diagnosed with lung cancer, you know, if they're a smoker, you better believe they're beating themselves up for it. And what we don't want to do is add to that. And what I say to my patients is, you know what? It's not your fault, and I'm really sorry this happened to you, and you don't deserve this. And people will think, oh, I deserved this, but nobody deserves this kind of bad news. And there are lots of people who smoke and never get lung cancer. And frankly, there's a lot of people who get lung cancer and never smoke. And so being compassionate to yourself, it's bad enough. ALS, Parkinson's disease, heart failure, cancer, those are bad enough. And trying to be kind to yourself, like, here I am now, what can I do going forward? You know, there are 6 million people in the U.S. with heart failure, over 5 million with Alzheimer's, and 5,000 people a day receive a diagnosis of cancer. And so being kind and really understanding it's not your fault, even if you smoked. And if you talk to someone with a diagnosis like that, to be really sensitive of that. Sometimes we'll ask people, oh, lung cancer, wow, did you smoke? That makes everybody feel bad. If you smoked, that really doesn't help. And then you feel terrible. You already feel terrible. And if you didn't smoke, it also makes you feel terrible that you got this illness. And so really trying to avoid that. I think what people are trying to do in that situation is think, how am I different? How do I make sure this doesn't happen to me? But instead, the best response is to say, I'm so sorry that happened. You know, it's really not fair.
Talking to Dr. Steve Panelat. He's the author of the new book, Life After the Diagnosis. We're talking about what happens after that diagnosis of a serious illness, life-changing diagnosis, maybe the thing that's going to kill you, the last diagnosis in your life. And Dr. Panelat, you talk a lot about how we live. This isn't a book about how we die. This is a book about how we live after that diagnosis and the importance of figuring out what goals we want, what goals we can achieve, and how we can get there. How do we do that?
I say there are two golden questions that we should ask. And the first is, what do you hope will happen when you look ahead? And to ask yourself or to ask your loved one that question, what do you hope for? You know, what's really important to you? And then on the flip side, to think about or to ask yourself, what do I worry about when I look at the future? What worries me the most? Hope. What you hope for, the things you really want to have happen in your life. I hope to see my daughter get married. I hope to see my grandchild be born. I hope to visit my hometown. I hope to live in my own home. I mean, there's a lot of things that people hope for that go beyond a cure. Sure, you hope for a cure, but we know that a lot of these very serious illnesses don't have cures. They have treatments, but not cures. And yet there's a lot you can hope for beyond it. Hope for healing, even in the face of suffering. Hope for comfort, even when there's discomfort, and hope for all that can be despite all that can't be. I was taking care of a woman, Mary. She was in her 70s, 72-year-old woman. She had very advanced what's called interstitial lung disease. It's a scarring of the lung that has no cure. And she was in our ICU at our hospital on a lot of oxygen, so much oxygen that she couldn't leave the hospital. And she was really very sick. And when I asked her that question, what do you hope will happen? She said, you know, doctor, what I really hope will happen is that I get to see my daughter get married. And I said, well, that's really important. When is that? She said, well, she's getting married in 10 months in Napa. And I realized, one, I didn't think she was going to live 10 months. In fact, I was pretty sure she wasn't. And I didn't think she'd ever get out of her ICU. But knowing that, we brought her daughter in and we talked about it with her family. And her daughter decided to get married in our ICU. And so, you know, a few days later, one morning, her daughter walked in this beautiful white wedding gown flowing on the ground. Her fiancé was there in a tuxedo. The patient had a corsage on her hospital gown. And the room was just filled with people, all the doctors, all the nurses, not a dry eye in the ICU. Understanding what she hoped for really allowed us to help her achieve that and to make sure that we didn't do treatments that would get in the way of that in the next few days or weeks, and make sure that she would be able to be at her best for that experience. And then on the flip side, asking people what they worry about. People worry that they won't be able to recognize their family, that they won't be able to ride their motorcycle, that they're going to end up in a nursing home. Again, understanding the hopes and the worries allows us to really frame the treatments in terms of what you hope for rather than just talking about what we're going to do for the disease, because we know that people are more than their disease, and they have they're a whole person, and we really try to focus on who that person is to give the best care to the individual.
We're talking with Dr. Steve Panelet. He's a physician and distinguished professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, talking about his new book, Life After the Diagnosis.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think that treatments for serious illness are focused too much on the disease and not enough on the person? Are you a caregiver who's seen the benefits of maintaining a patient's quality of life? Have you lost a loved one to a prolonged illness? And if so, what did you value most about the time you spent with them after the diagnosis? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're talking about living well with a serious illness and ways to maintain our quality of life for as long as possible.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we can improve the way we treat serious illnesses by focusing on the quality of life rather than prolonging it at all costs? Have you been in this situation yourself or with a loved one, that serious diagnosis of a serious illness? Something that's going to change the life, your quality of life, your life expectancy for that matter. What was important? What things did you focus on? How did you make, if possible, the best of that situation for yourself or someone you were caring for? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Dr. Steve Panelet, physician and distinguished professor at the University of California, San Francisco. His new book is called Life After the Diagnosis.
And Dr. Panelet, I wanted to bring up a phrase that's very important in your work, palliative care. Can you talk about what that is, what that isn't, and why it's so important?
Yeah. Palliative care is medical care that's focused on improving the quality of life for people with serious illness. It's care that, so what do we mean by serious illness? What we mean is people with cancer, heart failure, dementia, Alzheimer's disease, someone who's had a stroke, someone who has a chronic lung disease like emphysema. Those are serious illnesses. And the goal of palliative care is to help people have as good a quality of life as possible. Abraham Lincoln said, it's not the years in your life, but the life in your years that matters. And we want people to have a good quality of life, meaning we want to understand them as a human being, as a whole person, and provide care that provides both quality and quantity. And one thing we often talk about is, you know, do you want to choose quality of life or quantity of life? And what we know from palliative care is that you don't have to choose. That's actually a false choice. And there are many studies of palliative care that have looked at this and found that, in fact, with palliative care, you live better and just as long. And so it's a false choice when people say, do you want to live long or live well? You can do both. And palliative care, it's a team of doctors, nurses, social workers, chaplains who work together to focus on your quality of life, to focus on you as an individual, make sure your pain is well controlled, to make sure that your shortness of breath is well controlled, that you make good decisions about your care and that you're supported psychologically, emotionally, spiritually as you go through your illness. In fact, there are studies that show that for people with lung cancer, metastatic lung cancer that can't be cured, the study was done at Harvard, at Massachusetts General Hospital, by my friend and colleague Jennifer Temel. They found that all the patients there got chemotherapy, standard chemotherapy, which is really good. It's Harvard. But then half the people got palliative care in addition. And what they found is those people had less pain, less shortness of breath, less depression. They were more satisfied with their care. They had a better quality of life. And they lived longer by 3 months. In a disease where the average lifespan was only 9 months, they lived 3 months longer on average. And I like to say, you know, if palliative care was a drug, everybody would take it and it would be the biggest blockbuster. So you should definitely ask for and get palliative care.
I want to go to our callers now. We have Dee on the line in Eau Claire. Dee, hi.
Hi. Yes, I took care of my father who passed away from Alzheimer's about a year ago. And when I did not know what palliative care was until it was offered to us. And it was just like a light in the darkness when we were caring for him at home. And the nurses would come and teach us and be there for just support. They had lists of people that we could call that could help us, personal care workers. Because, I mean, with Alzheimer's, it just changes. It changes from month to month what you need. And it's so much care at the end. But palliative care and palliative care nurses are wonderful people.
Dee, thank you for calling. I'm sorry for your loss, but thank you so much for sharing your experience. Dr. Panlet, let's talk about that, the care also being out there to help the family caregivers, in this case, work with that patient.
The family caregivers are so important in this situation. We realize that, you know, illness is not something that happens to us as individuals. It's something that happens to all the people in our world, our family and our friends. And in palliative care, we really think about how do we support not just the family, but how to not just the patient, but how do we support the whole family in doing this and recognizing that, you know, it does in fact take a village when someone is ill, and making sure that you get that kind of help to be at home if that's where you want to be, and to have someone you can call 24/7 if you have a question. So often I see patients who say, you know, what I really want is to stay at home, but then something happens in the middle of the night. There's shortness of breath, there's pain, family doesn't know what to do, and people end up in the emergency room, for example, a place they really don't want to be because they didn't know what to do in the moment. And palliative care that you get at home, hospice care that you can get at home, can really provide that 24/7 support to make it possible, if you want to be home and to provide that kind of emotional support. And we know that palliative care services are not just good for patients, but there's good studies that show that it's actually helpful for the family members as well. Family members whose loved one had a conversation with their doctor about their preferences near the end of life, and people who receive hospice, their spouses, are less likely to get depressed in the 6 months after the patient dies. So it's good not just for the patient, but for the family as well.
Dee, thanks again for the call. We're talking to Dr. Steve Panlet. His new book is called Life After the Diagnosis. We'll go back to our callers. Kim is with us in East Troy. Kim, hi.
Hi. I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma blood cancer 2 years ago this coming May. And when I was first diagnosed, of course, I was confronted with, oh my gosh, I'm not going to have, you know, see my grandchildren. I'm not going to, you know, see my youngest son get married and all these things. But because of the treatment that I received two stem cell transplants, and I did them both outpatient, which took a lot of caregiving on my husband's part. But we were able to do this strictly from home and then going to the hospital on a daily basis. But I always returned home. I could come home to my bed. I could come home to my dog. You know, I could come home to all these things, which, of course, made my recovery so much more acceptable and so much more palatable. And I was able to see my youngest son get married. and I was able to see the birth of my first grandchild. And so my message is that I'm choosing life each day. I'm not necessarily looking for a specific quality of life or anything like that. I'm just choosing life, whatever comes to me. And I'm planning for the future, but I'm living each moment.
Kim, thanks so much for that call, and good luck to you and your family. Dr. Panalat, that's kind of the attitude you're looking for, not so much how are we going to die, but how we appreciate those days we have, whatever, however many there may be.
Yeah, that's a great... Thank you, Kim, for sharing that. I think that's exactly the message from my book, is that even in the face of serious illness, you can have tremendous joy in your life, and that while you're pursuing treatments for your illness, you can focus on how to make the best of every single day, and to recognize that even within the bad news, there can be a lot of joy and a lot of good things that happen, and the focus on every day, and that to me is really making the most of the opportunity. And that's the challenge we all face as human beings, is how do we make the most of every single day? And I think it's just a great reminder from Kim that's how we want to live. Live every day fully and look forward to tomorrow.
Kim, thanks for that call. Dr. Panalat, very briefly, just about out of time, there might be somebody listening driving home from that diagnosis right now. A few words of support and advice for them.
Yeah. If you've just gotten a diagnosis, get the information you need. Be careful about what you do on the internet. There's a lot of bad information out there, so only check reliable sites like the NIH, UCSF, Mayo Clinic, University of Wisconsin. Go to good sites. Get the information you need. Find a good doctor. This is the person who's going to be your partner in this illness. So find a doctor that you trust, someone that you really like. If you can't find a good doctor or don't have one already, ask nurses. They always know who the good doctors are and what their bedside manner is. And get the information that you need so you know how to move forward. Ask the questions. If you're not satisfied, get a second opinion.
And we'll leave it there. Dr. Panalat, thanks for joining us. That was Dr. Steve Panalat. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Life After the Diagnosis.